When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're the best sidekick I could ever ask for. Thank you, Roy. I feel the same about you.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Underrated Podcast. We're a podcast that discusses films that are underrated, underappreciated, and ones that have slipped under the radar and passed most people by. Today starts a new series for us. Think we are calling it what are we calling it again?
Unsung series.
The Unsung series, which we are going to be discussing movie series that we feel is underappreciated. And for this first one, it is Derek's choice, so let me pass it on to him.
So my underrated franchise is one that I was really a big fan of when I was younger. And that would be it's a duology, I guess, would be the correct term, and that is the Shanghai duology, Shanghai Noon, and the sequel, Shanghai Nights. And there has been, in planned many, many years, a planned third film in the trilogy that will likely, unfortunately, never come to fruition. But yeah, these are the films starring, of course, Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson, written by Alfred Goff and Miles Miller, who have written the screenplays for both films. These are films, of course, that are combination of westerns and kung fu movies, so, you know, a very East meets West thing, in a way similar to what Jackie Chan had previously done with Rush Hour, but in a way that made it much more focused on the genre conventions of the literal West and the literal East. These were my picks, but, you know, what did you guys think of these movies?
While I enjoy a little bit more the Rush Hour movies and I do enjoy the Shanghai movies, and they do have a special part in my childhood for that reason, just because I'm a really big Jackie Chan fan, especially in the 90s, early 2000s, where this and Rush Hour kind of live. And yeah, it's such a great, of course, showing of Jackie Chan and his physicality, and it kind of plays into more of the Buster Keatonism of how he fights in general. And with Buster Keaton and all those movies, like, essentially taking place in this kind of time period themselves, yeah, like, kind of leans into that more. Like, I know that in the second one, there was, like, a shot of, you know, using, like, a sliding ladder, and that's, like, a classic Buster Keaton move as well, and a little bit more slapstick in this kind of like genre movie than he could have in like Rush Hour. So yeah, definitely a very definitely fun series of movies, and him and Owen Wilson's dynamic is just pretty awesome. Like, I love Owen Wilson in this movie, in these movies. He just comes across as like a really awesome straight man, but not so much as a straight man as like
scoundrel
and kind of character, and to Jackie Chan's more like, you know, straightforward kind of character of Jean, and yeah, it's just like thoroughly enjoyable movies. I feel like more so I think I would hope that another movie gets added to the series. I know that Jackie Chan's always still up, I think, up for doing these kind of movies. Like, he kept on doing, you know, like fight movies and all that. But and then Owen Wilson is kind of like with the whole entry into Marvel and as Mobius has kind of had that physicality that he has in like Loki, and I could see him still being up for doing this kind of thing. It would be
they're both on board. Like, they, I think people want it to happen. It's just one of those things that's been stuck in developmental hell for a long time, you know?
Yeah, yeah. But I think, like, I think there's more, like, trudging of, like, Rush Hour 4 happening. And so, like, I wouldn't see... I would very much, like, just how the Rush Hour series and then the Shanghai Noon series were, like, a back-to-back. Rush Hour very much pushed forward Shanghai Noon, the Shanghai series occurring. I wouldn't be surprised if Rush Hour gets a sequel, then I could see, like, Shanghai coming off of that and getting a sequel as well. Just over the whole thing of, oh, like, the bull, especially if Rush Hour is successful, which I think it would be. It's just kind of like the nostalgia factor, and, like, you know, the studio's like, oh yeah, the nostalgia factor, like Jackie Chan, like, yes, let's do it. So yeah, just overall really good showing. One of my favorite moments I think was in Shanghai Nights, with the whole homage to like Gene Kelly, who's like one of my favorite you know,
I was like, Ariel's gonna love this Singing in the Rain shit. This is great.
Yeah. And just, yeah, like, I definitely, like, Jackie Chan is not just a martial artist. He's also, yeah, a dancer, a singer, and an entertainer overall. And I think that these series of movies, like, just play into that fully.
Yeah. Alan, how about you?
Yeah, I remember watching these as a kid growing up. I was a big Jackie Chan guy. Watched Rush Hour, Legend of Drunken Master was my favorite.
Yes, exactly.
Watched the shit out of that, Jackie Chan Adventures. But yeah, Doug, I remember seeing these in the theaters with my dad. We both loved to go watch, like, martial arts style movies. And this one, and these, like, rewatching was really cool, nostalgic. And Ariel hit some of the things I was going to say as well. Funny enough, I think it's funny that Jackie Chan fell down, like, a flag or a long draping thing twice, and, like, you know, only a couple years apart from each other in Rush Hour, you know, he's falling down that big old banner in the LA Convention Center, and the bomb scene, and then in this, he's in Shanghai Nights, he's falling down, like, the Union Jack. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. He's, like, reusing his stuff. And it's kind of cool seeing how, like, his choreography is. And I always was a big fan of, like, for me, those scenes, I know they're meant to be funny, but for me, they're always just more impressive, and I just love watching them. You know, that dude's just a master of using anything around him as, like, a prop to just make absolutely amazing choreography. Yeah, I will say I preferred the chemistry with him and Chris Tucker a little bit more than with Owen Wilson. I liked Owen Wilson. There's like a little weird disconnect. Not disconnect, but, like, the chemistry works, but not 100%. Not compared to him and Chris Tucker.
I think because him and Chris Tucker, those two characters are, like, designed as being, like, outsider characters, both of them together. Like,
mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Tucker is an outsider in the LAPD, and then, like, Jackie Chan is an outsider because, you know, he's foreign. And then with the dynamic between, you know, Owen Wilson's character, like, he is an outsider as well, being a bandit overall. But
I mean, I have my thoughts on that. I'll save them, though.
In that day and age, you know, bandits were, like, romanticized. He even, like, plays into that. Like, he's women want to be with him because he's still, like, you know, this romantic outlaw. So he's kind of like an insider to Jackie Chan's, like, outsider a bit too.
Yeah, I think also I didn't like his character as much because, like, I don't know, maybe because he would take advantage of him a lot. And I kind of bugged me. I know Chris Tucker kind of did that too in Rush Hour. But I don't know, something about the way Owen Wilson did it always kind of, like, nudged me the wrong way. But at the end of the day, they still were, like, home, like, friends, and, you know, they saved the day and everything. But yeah, funny enough, though, both films feel very, like, kind of unique in their own way. Like, I feel like even though Shanghai Nights is kind of its own thing, it's in Britain or whatever, I feel like that one kind of really geared a lot more towards, like, real life scenarios. Like, there was parts where they're, like, you know, Jack the Ripper, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Well, Charlie Chaplin, Little Kick-Ass.
Charlie Chaplin, yeah. Yeah. Oh man, I forgot about that twist. Like at the end when they were like, "Oh yeah, his name's Charlie Chaplin," I was like, "What the fuck?" I forgot about this. But I think at the time as a kid, I didn't really know much.
Yeah.
So I was kind of like, "Okay, whatever." Yeah. I don't know. You know what? I think out of the two, I think I like Shanghai Noon a little bit more. That one just because I think I preferred the Western setting more. I felt Nights was a little bit more like trying to get as many of these little like real life references in whenever they can, which is fun. It was a lot of fun that they were really good gags. I felt the choreography was a lot better in the first one. I will say Nights does have the great, you know, really good scene with the singing in the rain scene. I thought that was a lot of fun. And I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, Ariel's going to love this. And then just, I feel like they gave Jackie Chan a little bit more of the opportunity to use like his love for like a lot of older films like that, like Buster Keaton, Singing in the Rain and everything. And I think that's really cool because you see where he gets inspiration from. You see it in all his movies and he's always like pushing the boundaries. And this, in Nights, I felt like played it off a little more safer compared to the stunts done in Noon and his other movies. But yeah, for me, I'm kind of more just going off of like the fight choreography, because that's just my favorite part of like watching Jackie Chan's movies. Just, I love the fights. The fight scenes are the best. And I'm just always in awe of the choreography. But
yeah, and then also playing off of like Donnie Yen.
Yeah, dude, yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
I had no fucking clue he was in it. And then I was like, oh, I know Jared picked Shanghai Noon because of Walton Goggins, for sure.
I actually had forgotten he was in it. And I was like, I didn't realize it until like recently. I watched it like maybe a year ago. And I was like, is that fucking Walton Goggins? I was like, oh my God, I love this movie even more now.
I thought that's why you picked it. I thought that's why you were like, oh, I love this guy. I was like, damn, like even back in the day, Derek was like, I love this dude. You know, pre-justified.
He hadn't even done Cole yet.
Damn. Yeah, no, Donnie Yen really like shocked me because I was like, holy shit, like I didn't know he was in the business that long ago. But it makes sense. You know, he's been doing it for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool to see him and Jackie Chan kind of face off for a little bit. I thought that was super rad because, like, a lot of the time you want to see a lot of these martial arts heroes kind of go toe-to-toe together, like, you know, Jackie Chan, Jet Li, and Forbidden Kingdom, which I kind of think we should do that one.
I've been wanting to cover that one. Yeah.
It's a great, mm-hmm. It's a good one.
It's a really good, really good fantasy movie.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say but yeah. for that one.
Well, Derek,
maybe we
ahead.
Shouldn't cover it then.
No, we could do it. But but honestly, yeah, I love these movies. They were big hits for me when I was a kid, to the point where I didn't actually see either of these in theaters. I caught Noon on TV and we recorded it. And I just loved it so much. I just used to watch that VHS over and over and over, to the point where somehow, like, I knew, I guess I had heard the sequel was coming out, but we didn't get around to going to see it in the movies. But then a couple months later, it was the summer when it was coming out in VHS. It was my birthday. And sight unseen, I was like, give me the sequel for my birthday. And I was not disappointed. I loved it. And that's another reason why I chose these movies too. Not just because I like them both individually, but I really, as a franchise, like them a lot. And that's one thing I wanted to kind of get into a little bit with us talking about these franchise films, these, you know, this series that we're doing. I think that what a good sequel should do is not necessarily just be like, okay, here's just another story like the first one again, you know, like the whole Mummy Returns thing, where it's just like, we're doing the same movie again, the same, everybody's back, there's a bigger budget, we're gonna rush it into production. But it's like, you still have the core elements, but people have changed, like the characters have changed and grown, and then, so you have them kind of move on, and then you do something a little bit different. You know, it's like the Bill and Ted 2 thing, where instead of like, okay, we're just time travel again, it's like, no, we're going to hell and heaven and doing all this weird stuff. And this one's like, all right, the first one, and, you know, like you said, Alan, Jackie Chan was really the fish out of water. And the second one kind of makes both of them the fish out of water. Now, instead of being like, okay, Jackie Chan, it's this character from a kung fu movie essentially going into a Western film where Owen Wilson's at home, now neither of them are at home. Now they're going into this third new setting, which I thought was really a really interesting way to take the series. But yeah, I love, like you guys were saying, all of the physical comedy and dynamic between them, because you have Owen Wilson, who is obviously just hilarious. Like, he's just spouting all these one-liners, and he's just saying all these little things that just, like, make you laugh so much. And I just kind of love how he doesn't even care that he's being completely anachronistic. Like, he's talking like someone in the year 2000 or the year 2003, even though it's set in the Old West. And I just think that it's inherently is just very funny because he's playing it so straight. And you have that comedy. And it's, you know, like you guys just said, it's the same thing that kind of has Chris Tucker, but it has, for me, the added element of, like, it's in the Old West, so it makes it even funnier. And as much as I love Chris Tucker, he's amazing, the dynamic just works a little bit better between Jackie Chan and Owen Wilson for me personally. And like you guys had mentioned, Ariel said he's not only a great, you know, martial artist, he's a great dancer, he does all these things. And I think one of the big ones is that doesn't get talked about a lot is he is literally one of the greatest physical comedians to ever live. Like, he would have been a silent movie star had he existed at that time. You brought up the connection to Buster Keaton. You brought up the clear homage to Gene Kelly. Singin' the Rain is also, you know, it's about the kind of silent film era. Well, that's not a silent film. It's about that era. It's about an actor who is kind of aged out of that era. And then, of course, you know, Charlie Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin, they make him a character in this movie. That is no accident. They are clearly drawing a straight line between here's the silent, these amazing physical comedians of the silent era, and here's Jackie Chan. And that's something that I think needs to be, like, you know, championed and talked about more, is how just freaking funny he is. And they really have this good energy between them. You mentioned Donnie Yen. I also think that the guy who plays Littlefinger is really great. He's this kind of sniveling, evil British dude in this. And they have, I think, one of the greatest sword fights ever. That whole sword fight in the end of the first one in Big Ben, where Jackie Chan kind of has to learn, like he's out for revenge, he's out for vengeance. And he learns, you know, like, he ends up being like, I'm not going to beat this guy. I have to outthink him. I have to, like, basically sacrifice. And but then Owen Wilson's there to save him with, you know, the power of friendship, which is so great. And I think that any movie, both these films do this really well. Any films that where you have two characters that are on equal ground, which they are, and I love that they both think each other are each other's sidekicks. That's such a great wrinkle. And you really believe it. You really think, like, yeah, these guys would think that about each other. They learn things equally from each other. In the first film, Chan starts out as he's so duty-bound, he's so unflexible, he's got his duty, and that's all that matters, even if he, you know, he should be doing something else, he's blinded by this. And then he exact opposite, you've got Roy, who's just kind of like, whatever, not a care in the world, just, you know, we'll wing it. Like, even though he does have the plan, he's just like, he doesn't really care about people as much as he should. And then, you know, and to that point where there's that conflict in the middle of the movie where he just kind of, like, brushes off the, like, racist comments they say, and that really, you know, deeply hurts him, because, you know, it hurts Chan, because he thought they were friends. And by the end of the movie, they learn from each other, and they meet in the middle of, like, he's the one who kind of is, you know, Roy has the honorable act where, and John is the one who, like, learns, like, no, sometimes you have to just do what is right and not what is necessarily expected of you. And they find that middle ground. And then, just to kind of wrap up what I was saying, I love that in the second one, it's kind of mirrored where, I'd love to, just to go on that point of the how Owen Wilson gets, you know, has that racist comment. In the second one, at the very beginning, to show that, you know, this character has not regressed, one of the, you know, the ladies that he's hanging out with says something about John, he's like, or says something about, like, the Native Americans, and he just immediately shuts it down. He's just like, no, I'm not going to do that again. And I love to see, you're like, okay, good. This character has growth. The sequel is moving forward. We're not going to just reset everybody like they do so often in sequels. And in this one, it's John's the one who kind of, like, ends up doing something behind Roy's back that betrays him a little bit. But he gets back in his good graces. And you guys know me. I love films about male friendship and male bonding. And that, especially when they're just as pure and wholehearted as this. And I think this really is. So it's got to win for me for all of those reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they flat out, like, you know, spell it out for you of, like, being a reminiscent character of old Hollywood, because when they say that they go to old Hollywood, they're, it, like, Owen Wilson's character flat out says, like, oh yeah, you'd fit right in there, because he is essentially that kind of character. So, you know, so like, yeah, like a really clear and easy conclusion to kind of make with this kind of character and with his movement. And then, yeah, just like throw in Littlefinger to be a bad guy, and it fits so well. And in my pick for this series, he's in that too, and he's in one of the movies. And he's essentially that kind of character, and so yeah, like it's just, you know, the actor kind of thing. He comes
Adrian
off as like
Gillen, kind of, I think is his name.
Yeah.
Let me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he just comes off as that kind of character, and does, you know, he does what he does best with this kind of movie,
yeah.
And yeah, like it was a very cool and interesting, like, even with the bad guys, like in Shanghai Knights, of having that kind of dynamic of being mirrors of themselves, as well as like what they are planning on doing to get, you know, their seats in power. And then Shanghai Knights, that villain was like really, I think the Shanghai Knights villain a little bit more. I mean, no, the Shanghai Noon's villain a little bit more, because like the sinisterness of it, his dynamic with like Lucy Liu, who's like that's an awesome kind of like, well, of the,
yeah,
time.
She's
like,
great. You know, we haven't even mentioned Lucy Liu and how good she is. Lucy Liu and Fan Wong.
Definitely,
Wan,
it was
them.
Originally like, you know, definitely like of that time, you know, because with Charlie's Angel coming out and then Kill Bill eventually coming out, like, you know, Lucy Liu is like already that prime American cinema kind of like a Asian character or Chinese character actress. And so, of course, yeah, having her in it was like, it was a perfect casting, because, you know, it was the casting of that time. And it would be really awesome if another movie were to come along and stuff like that. I'm sure, and I would hope, at least, and especially with her, you know, rising stardom and things like that, of like Michelle Yao and that whole reunion between her and Jackie Chan, with you know, Jackie Chan giving Michelle Yao one of her biggest breaks, and it wasn't
Police Story.
Yeah, it was Police Story. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. So I kind of want to dive in real fast. There's going to be different questions, you know, for the series. I feel like not all these questions are going to fit for each one. So for this one, I feel like I have a couple answers of my own, but I want to hear what you guys think. Why do you think that? I think both films did pretty well at the box office. I know Noon obviously did because they got a sequel, but Knights, I remember people digging it, and I think it did fairly well. I'm not sure. I got to look it up. But my question is, why do you think this franchise particularly, why do you think we never really got the third? You know, why didn't they finish the trilogy? Or do you guys have your own theories as to why it didn't continue?
Well, like, you can go, Ariel.
I think that, like, so I think the Shanghai, I think Rush Hour 3 came out after Shanghai Knights, or did it come out?
I think it was 06.
It was after. Yeah.
So I don't know how Rush Hour 3 kind of performed. It always felt kind of like it didn't perform as well as like the other two. So maybe they were shifting gears with Jackie Chan. I feel very much so like during Rush Hour 3 kind of time, these types of movies, like the Jet Li movies, and while they might not have gone down in quality so much, I think the market in itself was kind of getting a little bit more saturated, especially with like the increase of more like movies that were inspired by these types of movies per se, like the Jason Statham kind of movies, like The Transporter and like all of those kind of movies. They kind of had the same kind of feel, but not a great quality as mm-hmm. you know, because there wasn't like the talent of real martial artists. But I think that around this time, like that, they kind of had that saturation of movies that like essentially were Jackie Chan and like martial arts and classic Chinese action movies inspired, but they're, you know, the Americanized, sometimes bastardized versions of these movies, and maybe that might be a reason why. And there wasn't really great ones. Like, I mean, like, on the topic of Jet Li, like, The One, it's okay. But well, then, like,
I like The One.
Okay, yeah. The One is good. It's just kind of, it's, you know, it's a kind of somewhat a Highlander a little bit. With
it's
that.
No Way Home before No Way Home.
Oh,
it's,
my God.
It's like a mixture of No Way Home and The Highlander, because there could literally, it's called There Could, there could Only Be One. But then also, like, while it is a cult kind of movie, but like Romeo Must Die, okay, and those kind of things, and yeah, maybe that might have been a reason why. I know, like, after this, Jackie Chan's films in general kind of took a more serious tone in them. I know, like, the most recent one that I could kind of remember is, like, the one that he was, like, I think pitted against, like, Pierce Brosnan's character. And it felt very much more of, like, a Taken kind of, like,
I know which one you're talking. That was a while back, I think.
Yeah, he hasn't. Yeah. I don't think he's made any movies, like, fairly recently. But yeah. So, it might just been, like many things. Like, the market shifted gears in a way.
Yeah.
And that would be my understanding. But things, I feel like it's a time of, like, a rolling back around. I think it's, like, a nostalgia is like a form of like 20 years or 25 to 30 years kind of thing. So I think it's time to roll it back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
I
especially
mean,
with things coming out like Everything Everywhere All at Once, which is very Jackie Chan in feel, you know, with, or like not just Jackie Chan, but like Asian kind of culture, like is coming back. And then like speaking also of Michelle Yao, like the Disney Plus show American Born Chinese is very influential in that kind of way. So that kind of feel, I think, is coming back. And so, prime time.
Yeah, so, I mean, I can speak on this with a little bit of knowledge because, you know, I have been kind of following every couple of years it will crop up like, oh, we're going to do this movie. We're going to do Shanghai Dawn. You know, there's talks of like, oh, we're going to have this one set in China. And it kind of always feels as it never really goes anywhere. And I think the big reason is that, like, in 2003, and I'm not to say, you know, that they aren't movie stars now, people still clearly love them, but like you were saying, Ariel, Jackie Chan's not in a ton of stuff anymore. Owen Wilson, he's, you know, he's still around, but he's kind of, you know, more of a supporting character now. They're not these big bankable stars like they were, at least not like they were then. Like, they're still stars, but they're not what they were at the height of their power. So it's a little bit harder to sell that movie. So then it would have been if it came out like 2005 or something. Also, if you look at the box office, they weren't bad. They didn't fail, but they weren't great either. They weren't like, okay, all steam ahead for this one. And I just like glancing at Knights in particular, the budget is $50 million and it made about 90, which sounds good on paper, but if you actually like break down, Matt Damon actually explained it really well on an interview he was doing recently. He's like, the reason a lot of movies like don't get made for these quote unquote mid-budget movies, and they've been disappearing, and like this is clearly a mid-budget action comedy through and through. But he's like, if I make a movie for $25 million, then I have to spend another 25 to market it, and then then half the budget, half the money we make goes to the theaters themselves, and the movie itself only makes, the studio only makes half that money. So on a $25 million movie, to be profitable or to break even, has to make $100 million. And that's an oversimplification, but that's a good way to think about it. And so really, these movies were not making enough money to be like, all right, cool, let's get a throw in right out the gate while this is still a hot property, while these are still stars at the peak of their power. And like looking at these movies, you can see why they would cost that much money. Because there was like a shot, I remember in the first one, where Jackie Chan is walking over the mountains of Nevada, and like there's this like, you know, helicopter shot that just goes around him. And I was like, you would never see that shit in the comedies today.
Mm-hmm.
They're pretty much not making comedies like this anymore. These mid-budget action comedies that actually have some money put into them. Really, the only place you're seeing action comedies with any or just in general, are on streaming services. That's pretty much it. You're getting Netflix ones, you're getting Apple Plus ones, especially. But as theatrical draws, it is honestly a genre that pretty much doesn't exist anymore, as sad as that is.
Yeah, actually, one of our old co-hosts, Fred, brought that up. Not particularly like action comedies, but he's like just comedies in general, where he's a really big fan of like, you know, old school and like a lot of those like, you know, early 2000s college type of humor, or not college humor, but like the, college films. Yeah, like frat stuff. Yeah, like it was like the frat pack stuff.
Tell him to go see Joyride, because Joyride brings that back in a big way.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that one, but...
It's the Asian girl ensemble ones. It has, like, the girl from Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Unfortunately, he probably won't watch it then. He likes, like, the really guy humor, but...
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, so... And he kind of brought that up, where he was like, oh, it sucks that you don't see it often anymore, and it's very true. It's kind of what, like, you're saying, Derek. Yeah, because they need to be profitable. And I saw that Matt Damon interview as well. I think it was on Hot Ones, right? Where he's talking about, like, VHS and, like, DVD sales. Yes. And that's kind of how they would make their money back. Even if, like, it didn't kill at the box office, they were still lucky enough to get that money. But now with streaming, it's so much more difficult.
Which is how these movies really made a lot of their money. It was New Nights got made because Noon did really well on the secondary market.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, that's how you hear about, like, 90s movies that, like, kind of became cult classics, or almost even became, like, household name films, where, like, you know, they're like, yeah, this movie sucked in the box office, but when it came out on rental, fucking blew up, word of mouth, everything, you know, like, you would just hear those films would make gangbusters, and they would just be, like, household names, where they're just like, oh, yeah, this movie was huge, and then you tell someone, you're like, oh, no, it was trash at the box office, but now it's huge because of rentals and VHS. And, yeah, I think Netflix right now is the only streaming service that I really see that you see these, like, action comedy. Like, lately, you've been seeing them a lot more lately. You've been seeing it a lot more on Netflix. I actually saw one the other day with my dad, and I was like, damn, this is a typical, like, something we would see back in the 2000s. But my other theory was that the buddy kind of movie, the buddy kind of martial arts movie, I feel like was kind of going out of vogue as well. Because I remember the big thing in the mid-2000s was like more visceral, like martial arts films. Like Ung Bak with Tony Jaa. That movie was fucking brutal. The martial arts choreography was amazing. But, like, it looks so fucking real. Like, and not to say that, like, Jackie Chan's stuff isn't, you know, he's incredible. But, like, the way they edited everything and the way, like, the stunt work was, like, it just looked like it fucking hurt. And I think audiences were really, really digging that. And I remember we went to go see Forbidden Kingdom, and it was, like, 2007. And even that felt really, like, out of place. Because, you know, that now there was, like, comic book movies coming out little by little, like the Marvel, you know, Ghost Rider, Fantastic Four stuff is kind of coming out, and I think that's where it started building up its like traction. And then there was a lot of horror remakes, so I feel like when that movie came out, Forbidden Kingdom, I felt like it was just really out of place. Like, I know Hero came out a couple years before that, and even that, I remember, I think it did pretty well, but there was just I think the 2000s, there was a lot of experimenting and a lot of like changing things up and being like, all right, we're going to do this, or we're going to try this. And I think the whole buddy martial arts movie was kind of just at its last legs and kind of going out the door for more hard hitting, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because Jackie Chan, like he's physical in a different way. He's graceful. Like when he like gets hurt, it's like there's a lot of like where he like shakes his hand. You know, it's not like there's no like crunching.
Which
like
is
it's
a
not
tall,
like
yeah.
It's a very different style. You know, it's and like you're saying, yeah, it's kind of gone out of vogue for that more realistic, brutal style. Alan, I didn't mean to cut you off, but
I mean, like even with that, like it's I feel like martial arts movies overall is very much like an ebbing and flowing of feel of the movie, and you mentioning Jackie Chan kind of like, you know, shaking off his hand, that is actually like a callback to actually like Bruce Lee, who would do that as well, but in a more serious tone, like, oh, okay, good hit kind of thing, like in a more serious tone, whereas Jackie Chan, it's like, ah, it hurts. So yeah, like it's like even in that, it kind of like shows like this like ebbing and flowing. And then like to call back, which one of like, I not to call back, but to speak of another movie that I do feel like we should cover on this, but was like, is considered kind of like a transformative kind of movie, especially in this kind of realm of martial arts comedy, is like Kung Fu Hustle, which is like such a
fucking phenomenal
film. Phenomenal, still under the radar. I know it's like along lines of this is like people are begging for a sequel, which like I, you know, still hear rumblings and hopefully one day. But even with that, like that being a comedy overall, it is very not visceral but intense in its action scenes, and it lays in a really beautiful way. It lays into like special effects, and so like I think that is kind of like a, like going back to that kind of the era that we find, you know, after Shanghai Nights, is like this, yeah, moving to this kind of like type of martial arts movie. I think like Ip Man, speaking of Donnie Yen, Ip Man series kind of started to come out as well. And so like I think that the overall audience that are interested in martial arts movie was kind of like moving back to like seriousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'd say it kind of like splits. I feel like almost like it either goes like very serious, like, you know, the Raid type shit, or it goes the complete opposite direction where it is more like fantasy and more like, you know, very wuxia, and like people are like, do, like, you know, you mentioned Hero or like Crouching Tiger. I know those were before this, but you know, they start to really hit the mainstream, and so you kind of go one of those two directions, whereas something like Shanghai Nights is kind of down the middle. It's not, you know, it's theoretically like real, like it's not, you know, people aren't soaring through the air and stuff like that, but it's not also like brutally realistic. So that middle ground, I feel like, has really disappeared.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, but that... I think that I'm hoping with the success of Everything Everywhere All at Once, that which is clear, it is very much a middle ground, while also being very
more of the fantasy one. You know, it's because it's, you know, it doesn't have like, which she's got like the thumb that's the pinky that's like super muscles and stuff like that.
Yeah, you know? If you're speaking of fantasy, I think I was meaning like more so like the mixture of serious and comedy. But I see where you're saying about fantasy and realism. Then definitely leans more into the fantasy, which Kung Fu Hustle also kind of leans into. Well, I think that might actually it borders the line, but it leans more into the fantasy, I guess, so as well.
Both of those films, I feel like, are both lightning in a bottle, because they both have. It's kind of like they have really good world building for just being like solo films, like, you know, just Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Kung Fu Hustle has like, you know, the Axe Gang and all that stuff, but like All at Once is like kind of a multiversal kind of sci-fi fantasy martial, like they kind of, it's kind of like Star Warsy, where they blend all of these genres. So I feel like those two are very unique compared to Forbidden Kingdom or Shanghai Nights or anything like that, because these are kind of like, we're focused on this genre, like this is martial arts but it's action comedy, this martial arts action fantasy, while those two are just like fucking everything. Like when I got out of Kung Fu Hustle, I was like, dude, that was like Dragon Ball. Like for me, I was like, this is the closest I'll ever get to a live action Dragon Ball. And then Evolution came out, and I was like, I want to shoot myself in the fucking face. Yeah.
But Alan, what if Goku was a white kid? Like, did you ever think of that?
Oh my god, dude. I've never been. That's where I go, you know what, Derek? You know, Superbad is only better than that movie.
Okay, Alan.
Superbad is not bottom of the barrel.
You're so gracious.
I got yelled at the other day on Reddit because I was saying how much I didn't like Superbad, and everybody was mad at me.
Well, I'm usually not in defense of Reddit, but it looks like they did a good job for once.
True. I do. I could care yes or no.
But anyways, yeah. But like, yeah, I think just sometimes somebody just gets the idea and has a great script and just knows how to meld everything all together. Well, so those two pictures, I think, are just absolutely wonderful and phenomenal. And just, yeah, again, lightning in a bottle for those two. So,
yeah. Well, Alan, that actually leads into something that I had wanted to talk about. You talk about, like, somebody gets a good script or something like that. And these films, like I said, they're directed by two different directors. But as I said in the beginning, they have the same writing team. It's the writing team of Alfred Goff and Miles Miller, who would obviously would remain interested in martial arts stuff because they would go on to make... why am I spacing on the name of the show right now? Into the Badlands. Thank you. Which is that? If we were talking about underrated shows, we could talk about that show because that show is incredible.
Absolutely.
But you know, I think, and that's something. It's very, very relevant right now because there's a writer strike going on, and people I think do not realize how absolutely essential writers are to the process of film. Like they are. They are the ones who write the words, who make the characters, who do everything. And they are on strike right now because they're not getting what they deserve from the producers. They're not getting livable wages, all that good stuff. And this just shows how important a real creative vision from writers are. Because these guys, while they've made, like I said, they made this, the Super, and they made that, they're maybe some of the most influential people, I think, that nobody talks about. Because not only are they responsible for all of the DC stuff that we saw, all the DC Arrow stuff, the whole Arrow CW universe, ooh, because they made Smallville, and then Smallville kind of grew out of Arrow. In the same way, they were the writers for Spider-Man 2. And without Spider-Man 2, you don't get an MCU. Simple as that. The tone of that movie is so influential in everything that Marvel has done. And so these guys are some of my favorite writers ever. They're a great team. They're great together. And I think that's why, hey, this is a movie, a great bromance in this movie, a great bromance in real life wrote it. And writers are important, and people need to realize that. And this movie, these two movies, are great examples of that.
Are they still writing with each other?
They are. They're developing because they are the guys who work equally in TV and film. I'm not sure exactly. I've heard some rumblings of them working on a new TV project, but yeah, they're still working together.
That's pretty sweet. I'm glad to hear. Yeah, I don't even know they did Spider-Man. But yeah, no, you're absolutely correct, though, dude. I mean, like, writing is an essential part. It's fucking wild to me that so many people don't realize, like, how important writers are. Mm-hmm. Like, it boggles my mind. I'm like, we've been watching, you know, we've had films for more than 100 years now. And I'm just like, do you think the fucking actors think about it? You think the director's just like, here, say this, say that? Which is funny enough, mm-hmm. I actually was reading a screenwriting book long, long, long time ago. It was like when I was in high school, and I remember the first page saying, yeah, screenwriting is, you know, writing. It's not the actors coming up with it. And I'm like, who the fuck thinks like that? That they just go, oh, yeah, you know what? You know, like Tom Cruise is like, all right, I'm going to jump off this fucking plane and then I'm going to say this. And then Henry Cavill's like, cool, I'm going to cock my arms and reload them. You know, like, I'm like, no,
he
somebody
did come up with that part. Yeah, but yeah.
That might be a bad example. Like, I think Tom Cruise does write a lot of that shit.
Sorry. No, I was trying to be relevant with the movie coming out.
Yeah, but it you're right. Collaboration. But I think it's very much like unfortunate. The saturation of the market brings that kind of like people thinking, like, oh, yeah, like, it's not a high demand kind of job, or like it's a high demand kind of job, but everybody's a dime a dozen. Everybody wants to, everybody says that they're a writer kind of thing, you know? So, when, you know, they don't have the skill, like true writers are essential. And unfortunately, you know, you have people on some sides like, oh yeah, I'm a writer too. But then it's like, but do you have the skills to write a good story, you know, kind of thing? Like, which, you know, you could try, you could hone your skills and build up to that level, but there is a level, you know, there's,
put your 10,000 hours.
Yeah, yeah, exactly, exactly. So it's like, for me, it's like, you know, I don't want to squash dreams, but I want to, like, people to, like, if you voice realism, like, yeah, I'm not at that level, or I'm not that kind of writer yet, at least. And it's like, you show an importance to the writers that are actually really good and like doing the work and stuff like that.
It's hard for people to even get to that level because of the system that is in place now. That's why the writers are striking, is because writers who have been in the industry for a while are fine, but it's because of all the stuff with like mini rooms and everything, the way that it now shows don't run for 24 episodes, they run for 9 episodes. These smaller writers that would come up on, you know, shows, like how Damon Lindelof came up as just the writer on Alias, you know, and then he was eventually given his chance with Lost and stuff like that. You don't get that these same opportunities because of the way that the system has changed, and that's one of the big reasons why they're changed. So people don't get the chance. So like you're saying, Ariel, they don't get the chance to hone those skills. They are not given the chance to hone those skills because of the way that Hollywood, or that the, you know, especially like TV is changing and fucking writing is over. And one of my, and this ties back to Alfred Goff and Miles Miller, one of the my favorite picket signs that went viral was, without writers, Jenny Ortega would have nothing to punch up. And that is relevant because these guys were the writers and showrunners of Wednesday. That was the last big project they had. So it all ties back together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's just kind of like, it is an essential working. It's like very much, it's just, because like, you know, you've got bad writing, and it's kind of like, well, are those writers good? You know, like,
No. I'm pushing back on that, Ariel. I think that they need, like I said, they need to get, and there's bad stuff, but I mean, that's probably, like, if you see something that's bad writing, I don't think you go, hey, these are bad writers. You go, there's probably some shitty studio notes. They're probably like, you had to include this and this and this and this.
I want to be the little happy middle ground, because I don't want to squash anyone's dreams, but I want them to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
And writing's hard. Writing is very difficult. And just like Derek was saying, you know, there's not many opportunities. But also, like Ariel was saying, that, you know, there are bad writers, but you can still get better. And that's the beauty about writing, is that you keep going at it. You keep trying. And
I would say that there's bad showrunners, because they're the ones. Like, yes. That would be.
I would say studio execs too.
I'm just thinking of the Flash's showrunner and how stupid he is. I'm sorry. Okay. That's the one that popped into my head. So yeah.
No, it's all good. I stopped watching it after like the fourth season. Same with Arrow, but anyways, yeah, but I just want to say, like, I don't want people to feel like they're like, oh, what the fuck, you know, like, who are you guys to say? But it's like, no, but like, writers, when you have a great writer, you create something beautiful, and you create worlds for all of us to be entertained by. But also, you know, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't end up working out, and it's unfortunate, but you know what? I'm pretty sure there's a plethora of writers who've wrote films and books and comics or whatever that they have, you know, they fucked up here, but they got better over time.
Yeah.
And you just got to keep at it. You just have to remember, just like anything. And the thing is, I don't want to call them friends, but like, they were like people I went to parties with, like, you know, 10 years ago, and, you know, we're all young and we're all drinking and we're all having a good time and everyone has dreams. And, you know, I knew people who were like, going to Hollywood, and they're like, I'm going to be a writer, I'm going to be a director, I'm going to be an actor, whatever. And they went fucking young, like 18, 19 years old. And, you know, we're 22 at the time. And they're just like, I'm like, oh, so you were in Hollywood? They're like, yeah, I was working on this and I worked on this. And they do give up, and they're like, man, this shit is hard. And they're trying to put their stuff out there, and they're really pushing it and pushing it. And, you know, they get notes back and they're just like, nah, man, this shit ain't that great, whatever. And unfortunately, they give up. And the whole point of the story is like, you got to keep at it. You got to keep honing in your skills. You got to keep practicing it. You know, I'm not saying I'm a fucking professional writer or anything whatsoever. I don't have 10,000 hours and nothing like that. I write in my head and I write notes on my phone, whatever. But I can't say I've published anything or I'm a pro. All I can say is, like, as someone who's had to deal with hard stuff over time, and you got to put in a lot of work and everything, that's what you got to do. You got to keep at it. You got to keep going, and you can't stop. Cause like, it sucks, you know, seeing those people, like, you know, at those parties, you know, their dreams kind of broken a little bit, but you know, I hope maybe one day they went back and they gave it another shot. But
yeah,
yeah, it's just like anything.
Yeah,
like
I think what I was trying to get at, and I'm sorry that like I kind of like didn't explain myself well.
No.
How the bat? I think it's like kind of like the way that like corporations and all that is justifying the essentialness of writers is very similar to how people feel about like nurses, for example, where there's bad apples, there's bad nurses, very bad nurses that, and as always for a bunch of things, the bad always like overshadows the good sometimes overall, and like so I can see like which is a bad justification in both situations of like, oh yeah, like nurses don't need to be paid because they're not doing a good job, the kind of thing, like, which they should be paid. Truthfully, the good ones should be paid more than the bad ones just because of quality and stuff like that. And like, but with, yeah, like, so I can see like that, like, I think that's like thing that corporates are trying to do of like, oh, well, you guys aren't making good things, but partially because of the mini rooms and all that. But then also, you know, like some people don't come up with good ideas naturally. But yeah, I think that's what I was kind of trying to get to, kind of like that. You know, like it's unfortunate that both kind of situations kind of show like essential kind of like worker, you know, like nurses take care of us and stuff like that, and then writers like, you know, better our souls in the way because of their writing and things like that. And so yeah, that was what I was kind of like getting to, of like, of just being in the mindset of like, you know, corporate things. And I feel that myself in my current, you know, like day job position of just like the bad overshadows. Thankfully, like I work in a group that actually gets recognition when we do better and get equally like, you know, like essentially our benefits get justified as like, yeah, you guys get better benefits than this other group because you guys did better and things like that because you guys worked hard, you know, and you did the right thing and you do the right thing. And I think that it is an unfortunate situation that all writers are in. And yeah, some of them just need to like, they don't get opportunities overall. And like, I think that's why like they're strike, and you know, that's one of the reasons why they're striking is to get more better opportunities. And yeah, while I don't like mini rooms and like the whole nine things, I do like shorter seasons.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. And it's not the problem. It's that studios are using that to kind of take advantage, that new, you know, format to take advantage of writers. And, you know, something else I was going to say is just like, you know, you have something like The Blacklist, which comes out every year of all these amazing scripts that get written. It's like, here's the list of, I don't remember how many it is, like 50 scripts or whatever that are incredible that are not made into movies. And they're always just like, there's always going to be so many movies like that because there's always great writers making great original content, but it's just like, hey, who wants to write like a fucking, you know, it's like the whole thing that happened, like, you know, Greta Gerwig, you know, writer director could be doing some amazing new thing, but she's making a Barbie movie. So she's going to make the best Barbie movie ever, but it's like she has to make a movie about a Mattel toy because that's the reality that we live in, I guess.
Are we saying that she didn't choose Barbie?
No, she did. I'm not saying that, but like there's just this thing that came out recently with her agent that was basically like, it's like, we would love to see, basically, I'm paraphrasing him, but what he said was, we would love to see these auteurs get to make their passion projects and things like that. But what the reality is that those are probably not going to get funded by studios. And what's going to get funded by studios is the Barbie movie. And it's good that we have that these people who are artists are going to make the Barbie movie instead. So what I guess I'm saying with the whole Blacklist thing is like, there are these writers that might not have a name like Greta Gerwig that might be trying to make their own thing that can't get a Barbie because they're not Greta Gerwig and their movies are never going to get made.
But Greta Gerwig got kind of somewhat got into her position a little bit because of her husband. But
and that's the thing too. It's a lot of who you know. It's not. It, yeah. You can if you don't know somebody.
That's a big part of it. Yeah.
That's the thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the whole she's gonna do a Barbie. Essentially, it's what you hear all the time. Directors, where they got to work on a passion project, but they had to do something else. It's one for them, one for me.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what it is. You know, and I'm pretty sure she probably has passion projects she wants to work on. Studios were like, well, do Barbie. She's like, all right, fuck it, I'll do Barbie. I'm not saying that that's her, she was like, oh, you know, that's her plan, but
yeah, and I'm still excited. I think it's gonna be good.
I don't know if we okay, because like the way she talks, she is like this Barbie, she's very passionate about it.
Yeah, so I'm not trying to say she's not excited about it. She's
no, the way that she's talking, yeah, the way that she was talking, I would think that she. Came up with like let me do a Barbie movie, but if that's not the situation, then okay.
Yeah, I mean we're getting into stuff that you know we don't even know about. Like we're not fucking we don't work there. We don't know what's going on. Yeah. Ultimately, the whole thing we're trying to bring up in the conversation is like appreciate the writers because the writers are the ones that create these worlds and create this great dialogue. And just build all these relationships on film, television, story, you know, comics, whatever, you know, appreciate them and remember that, you know, they're a vital, vital, vital part of all of the lovely entertainment that we get to ingest in on the regular basis, especially now we're in a golden age of media in general. So, you know, like fucking right now, before we even started recording, I was like, I have 50 fucking shows I want to watch and catch up to, and I can't even decide what to watch.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'll watch some old anime. That's comforting. Yeah.
I just wish, you know, I wish that us as the audience didn't matter so much. That's the thing. I wouldn't care. I don't care about myself. So, I mean, you guys shouldn't care about me. And, you know, like, it's unfortunate how much audience... For good, there are good instances, there's bad, but majority... what is made is bad and because like audience like it and but audiences are overall stupid so I really wish that would be the movie Utopia of just not caring about audiences and just making what you make because it's like yeah like it's very much like how a painter paint majority you know paint just not care what they want to do and it's just like yeah that's the I know it's a utopian kind of thought
no but, I guess yeah. Because Ariel I've been watching The Bear and I feel like that show captures like being a creative and like really well because you like when you're you know creative of any type especially if, like with you know people who are putting out movies these things that cost hundreds of millions of dollars you have to succeed you can't like because in The Bear he loves cooking. He's cooking, you know, because he loves it. Because he loves the art of making food.
But, yes, chef.
Yes, chef. But, like, fuck Sydney.
The ultimate weight of just, like, having to create this thing. And he's, like, knows that his business has to be successful. Otherwise, he's completely fucked. Is just, stressful.
You aren't Carmi. This is a talk to Carmi now. Carmi, you go back. With the girl, just F off God. Sydney.
Sydney's fine. Like no, like
Sydney is a. Oh, I don't know and get it into it, but yeah.
She's not my favorite character.
He is the scum of the earth. Yeah. You know, at the end of season two, but yeah, we won't get into it because the bear.
Yeah, we
is
don't want to spoil. No spoilers for the bear, but
yeah, no, the bear is literally like it's one of my favorite shows of in recent history, and if you haven't watched it, go and watch it. It is a very stressful show. Mm-hmm. It is very triggering. if you are, as me and Alan are from a very dysfunctional family, beware of the fish episode because it was definitely a play out of many Christmases in my lifetime, and yeah, so very very triggering. If you come from a broken household like I do, so yeah.
Yeah, or like if you have anxiety. It does hit home a little bit if you have...
Or specifically anxiety created by these situations and lifelong, and like, that's why I love Carmi as a character overall, because, like, he is definitely... I feel, like, just like him.
I haven't seen it yet just because all the memes I see is, like, working in a kitchen, and I've worked in a kitchen way fucking too much.
Oh, it would stress you the fuck out.
So I'm already just like, oh my fucking God.
It's good, but it's so fucking stressful. I just watch it, and I'm like, God damn it. Like, it's so fucking good, but...
Yeah, because that meme of them yelling, get the fucking chicken sandwich or some shit like that. I was like, man, that was me when I was a fucking cook or a chef, whatever. Yeah. I'm like fucking yelling, get me fucking 200 burgers and patties. But yeah, that's anyways. No, no. Writers are important. That's why it's so stressful, because the writers do such a good job.
Writers are important, let them do what they want to do, because then you have The Bear, which is one of the greatest shows of all time.
Very, very well put. Well, why don't we get back to Shanghai Nights before we wrap up Shanghai Nudist Lights, guys?
I think we just go and watch the series, you know, especially if you are missing Jackie Chan. Then go and watch it, and hopefully, like, he comes back to it. I mean, he's gotten some kind of, like, there's that commercial that came out with him and his daughter, like, looking at old footage.
She's not his daughter, by the way. Kind of a misconception.
That's a big like fake news kind of thing. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So it's just like somebody interviewing him then, or just showing him. Okay.
It's like a movie where it's about his life, and that girl is his daughter in the movie. Yeah, it's a whole weird thing, because
unfortunately, I know that overall, like, and unfortunately, Jackie Chan being a representative of China, he's not a problematic person, but you know, the government that tries to control, you know, have
we don't need to go down that whole road.
Exactly.
That's probably why. So I get what you're saying. Yeah. Okay. But
real quick, super fast, Jackie Chan recommendations.
I like Forbidden Kingdom, Drunken Master for sure. I think Drunken Master is like it's a hidden gem, and it kind of sucked, cuz like that is literally like he came up with Drunken Master, like martial arts, and so it's very much like like a showing of his own the style that he created and stuff like that. So
you know, honestly, like my go-to Jackie Chan recommendations are like this and then Rush Hour. So I do very much like this flavor of Jackie Chan, but I do think he's also, I mean, I talked about how great physically he is, but he's also a really good voice actor. So I would shout him out in the Kung Fu Panda movies and the Lego Ninjago movie. He's really great in both those.
Wow.
He's upcoming Splinter in the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. And then I just wanted to say, too, you know, before we wrap up, just one thing, it was a stray thought that I wanted to say earlier, but when you guys were talking about the villains, I just kind of love that the conceit of the second one is, like, the villains are doing estranges on the train, which, like, what if you murdered this guy, you took out this guy, like, you kill each other's things, and we could inherit the throne, no one would suspect anything, just, like, fucking some Alfred Hitchcock shit, I love that. But just to touch back to what I said before about that whole shot in the mountain, I just was, like, in awe. I was like, you know, it's such a cliche to say, but they really don't make movies like this anymore. And it was so nice to revisit a comedy that was shot on a real fucking actual mountain. Like, that blew my mind, and I would love to see a comedy that's not based on anything, that's just with these two good stars, that's got a cool, interesting premise, that has some decent money put into it again. I would absolutely love that. But yeah, that's all. That's what I got.
No, absolutely, I agree. It's wild how much we took that stuff for granted.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, unfortunately, we got a lot of CGI stuff. A lot of the technology is great, but it's just never going to hit as well as just being on location.
Yeah, and you can do it now with like drones and shit. It's way easier to get a drone in the air than a fucking helicopter.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. So the technology is there for that type of stuff. It's just, it's whatever is hot, I guess. And everyone, for some reason, studios really think people love CGI. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But yeah. I mean, CGI wasn't necessary, of course. But yeah, and then the quick recommendation. Ariel said mine was Legend of Drunken Master. Is her name Ming-Na Wen?
Yeah.
From Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah,
from
Ming-Na
Mulan.
Wen.
Yes, from Mulan. From Star Wars.
Mulan, where Jackie Chan sang Be a Man in Mandarin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She is a great Chun-Li in Street Fighter the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Jackie Chan plays one of the most accurate Chun-Lis of all time. Go check out City
Hunter. I've seen
Hunter.
This shit.
Check out City Hunter. It's a really great film, and there's a really weird scene in the middle of the film that takes place in an arcade, and it's probably one of the most accurate live-action Street Fighter scenes you'll ever see on film. And Jackie Chan in drag plays Chun-Li. So definitely go check that out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, with that, thank you everybody for listening. If you like what you hear, Derek guests on a few podcasts. If you want to share those, if you have any recently.
Yeah, so I'm always on, I co-host with my friend Damien, the Can I Say Something podcast, which comes out the same day as this one. So definitely go check that out. And I don't think I have anything else recently in the pipeline. I think I mentioned last time everything was on, so yeah.
And then, besides that, part of our Undercast company, we have my show You've Never Seen, !! that comes out at the beginning of each month. So go and check that out. I have some really good conversations with some really good friends. So yeah. And anything else with that?
Yeah, check out our socials, check out our Patreon.
Click the link in any of our social bios and you'll find what you need to see. And with that, thanks everybody for being amazing.
Take it easy, everybody.
You are crazier than a road lizard.